Welcome to the Adele and
Michael Show,
where we discuss self-awareness as well as what's going on in and behind relationships. But most importantly, we help you navigate the relationship that you have with yourself. So welcome to WWDBAN.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm glad I'm here. And what questions do you have for me today?
What's our topic?
I think our topic is how your culture affects your beliefs and your perceptions. And how all that gets into your relationships with everybody.
Yeah. And changes the way you experience things.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Although lots of people think that cultures are different. Well, let me start with this piece here. All cultures are the same but look different. They do different things. They dance differently. They play different music. They have different slate set of beliefs. But you know what? The one thing that's in common with them all?
What is that?
They're all humans.
It's true.
So I guess they all have the same human emotions, the same human feelings, the same interpretations, the same wounds, the same feelings about abuse or happiness or joy or sadness or whatever it is. They're all pretty much the same, but they look different based upon the culture you live in.
Absolutely. I mean, they speak a different language, so you think they are different, but they are not.
Right. So whether it's Spanish, Italian, German, South African, Argentinian, I guess that's the word, Mexican, it doesn't really matter. We're all having the same kind of stuff.
Because if you have beliefs and family patterning, you're going to react.
Guess what? We all have them.
Yeah.
So we all have our different ones. We have different ones that trigger us, but all pretty much the same. So on one level, human beings are all the same. But the trick is that all of the different cultures create a different appearance, so therefore a different type of interaction is necessary, and a different understanding how people get to the same place. But they all go to the same place. And the one thing that most all people, I believe, are looking for at some level is some sort of love. Whether it's their self-love or love from their family, they all want the same thing. And in their core of cores, they're pretty much all striving or looking at the same thing. It's just their belief systems are jaded by their culture. So if I'm in a city that's at war with itself and I'm being bombed or shot at, then I got a different set of beliefs than you do if you live, I don't know, in Montana on a ranch. So it's completely different and yet the same. And we tend to look at all of ourselves as different. And so many people want to be acknowledged for their differences. And to me, this is a plus and a minus.
Yes, I know where you're going.
the plus is you have your uniqueness and you bring this really cool stuff from your culture and your background that's special unto itself. But at the same time, it can be divisive, it can be separatist, and it could be isolationist all at the same time. So it's really difficult for multiple cultures just to get along sometimes, especially if there's a history of bad blood between them, like in the Middle East, let's say. So these unique differences, they are sometimes, I'm going to talk on the dark side of them.
Let's go to the dark side.
We're going
to
do a Darth Vader thing. You know, and
I am your father. Yes,
we are all your father. So on the dark side, it really creates separatism and it really creates a distance between everybody. And everybody thinks that because my culture is different, I'm different than you and you're different than I and you don't understand me and I don't understand you. And boy, if we could all just get to that part where we're all just human beings having the same feelings, having the same understandings and the same wounds, that we could understand each other and we could realize that we're actually all one. We're all one doing different dances. And everybody's fooled by the illusion of the culture. Everybody goes to, well, they speak a different language, or they dance a different dance,
they
or
look
they like
different,
different music, yeah, mm-hmm. or their skin's dark, their skin's light, their eyes are round, their eyes are slanted, their whatever it is. And we get lost in these misperceptions, which is all separation. There's no unity in this, because it doesn't matter what color you are, what shape you are, where you've come from, where you've been, you're still human. And as long as you're human, we're still part of the same race, if you will. And the fact that we divide humanity into separate races, to me, is almost a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because you certainly can't get any unity that way. And some people like to hang on to the old or the past. Some people like to hang on to the wounds. Some people like the drama. Some people like to bring forward their hurt. Some people like to ignore their hurt. Let's just all get together. This just needs to be one place where we all live together. We can all share things. And we all just enjoy each other as human beings.
Well, that would be the perfect world, Michael. But
well,
what happens
is... that's what
we're
going for here.
I know. But what happens is what? The belief systems that you're programmed in when mm-hmm. you're growing up. You know, let's say your parents were prejudiced mm-hmm. and had certain beliefs about certain types of people. Then that changes things.
Right.
It does. I mean... and then yes. it continues.
So then those children get it, they bring it up, yep, and they bring it on. And now the two sides of that prejudice is, if you are feeling prejudiced against, mm-hmm. you will also be prejudiced against.
Resonation.
So if you think that people are looking against you or down on you because you're whatever, because you're Mexican, because you're African American, because... you're Spanish, because you're Italian, German, Irish, it doesn't make any difference. You will then look at them as some sort of oppressor, some sort of aggressor or judge, judging you for what is just in your genes. And it's not like you came and selected, hey, give me these particular genes and I'm going to walk off with them, and everybody's saying, whoa, those are the ugliest genes in town. Let's change your genes.
Yeah.
That's not how it happens. So we have to be very careful. So if we're feeling judged against, we have to be very, very careful, extra careful, that we're not judging or looking for people to judge us, because that becomes part of our belief system. And even though I'm Italian.
Italian.
I'm German. So I have these two cultures. And typically... the world would see me as whitish,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not even white. Mm-mm. So there's a whole other story.
You're tan.
Like, why do you call me white when I'm not white?
You're peach.
I'm not even peach. My shirt's peach. my skin's sort of tan. When I get tan, then I get kind of copperish. So what am I, copper? Like, what does that mean? Like, so who wants, why are they calling me white?
Yeah.
I don't even get that. So... why are we even referencing each other by the color of our skin, even in today's culture? It's absolutely absurd. It's absolutely ridiculous. Whether I'm calling you black, white, red, yellow, and those are pretty much, I guess, our four colors. Well, why are we even still referencing that, other than just knowing our genetic heritage?
Yes.
Why would we even care? If I'm a good human being, I'm a good human being. What does that have to do with what color I am? And I'm actually a changeling, because I'm a different color in the spring and fall.
True.
I'm a different color in the winter and summer. So actually, I don't even have one color. I'm a multicolor. And so how does that change anything? Why don't people judge you for that? And why do white people want to be tan and if they have color issues? I'm really... just some of these things, even as a kid, would be confusing to me. And of course, we're talking about patterning, we're talking about belief systems, we're talking about how humanity and their cultures really distorts perceptions and isn't really being straightened out. Like, some of these are just logical questions that I asked before I was 10 years old, and it never even made sense to me. And here we are all these years later and still the same challenges and the same difficulties. And then there's people who are proud of being the minority and people who are proud of being the majority, and all that pride just causes more issues.
And children don't think that in the beginning. Like, I remember my daughter, she had to be maybe 4 years old, and she said, "Mom, there's a peach and a brown person coming up to our door." So she clearly saw the color, the visual color of brown and peach.
Made no judgment of it. It was just a color. Big deal.
Like, she had no, it was great. I love that.
So why are we still continuing it in today's culture? Because our culture has not matured. It's just my opinion, but our culture has not matured, and there's too many things supporting it.
But let's go, culture.
Yes, let's mature. Culture up.
Mature.
Yeah. And then we add not just separate cultures, but the melting pot of America.
Ugh.
We're multicultural, and we're still arguing about color and culture. Like, geez, like, hello. Like, why doesn't everybody just base your... Even if you have to have an opinion, why don't we base our opinion on how the person treats us and how we treat them? That's pretty simple.
That's how it should be.
Like, instead of, here comes a white guy, or here comes a black guy, or here comes a yellow guy, or here comes a red guy. And yeah, okay, I might not be all politically correct and all that and whatnot, but to me, it doesn't matter because we're all human beings. So why aren't we seeing each other as human beings?
Because our culture programs us to believe and sustain the programming.
Right.
Let's keep it and let's reinforce it. And right?
And it keeps separation.
Yes.
So this is the part of the programming. The programming in all the different cultures does sustain and create separation. Separation amongst people, amongst cultures, amongst unity. It really deters unity. And so, if you want to be one, then let's accept all of us for just being all of us, instead of having to label us for what color or shape we are. And, well, for me, when I grew up, being Italian was not so popular. And it was very much a minority in the neighborhood I was at, and even was looked down upon, and I was teased quite a bit as a child for being Italian. I think I might have said this in another show or not, but my way to overcome that was I used to really take offense to it and really, really take it personal until, A, I realized that I wasn't Italian. Italian was just a heritage I had, and do I love my heritage and what it brought me? Sure I do. A lot of special cool things that I couldn't get anywhere else or at the Five and Dime, so I might as well be Italian. And there were a lot of cool parts because I was also German. So they had their pluses and minuses. And so what I realized is that I really wasn't them, but they were part of my history. And when I was able to separate from them, I was able to look at them and find the humor in some of the jokes, not take the teasing personal, not personalize everything, and then want to stand there with a battle baton ready to fight anybody who said anything about my culture. You have to let go of that. It's required for us to become a larger society, which is what we're moving to anyway.
Yes, that's true.
The internet's driving us there.
Oh yeah, it's awesome.
There's going to be a global society at some point, and so we need to let go of all these sillinesses about who we are and what we are based upon how we look. I mean, even whether you're judging people because they're heavy or thin or whatever it is, these are all unnecessary.
So basically you're saying just to detach, but still enjoy the art of making gnocchis and agnolottis and manigottis and polenta party. What's German side? I'm not German. I'm all Italian.
Oh, well, it's a good simple. Pork and sauerkraut.
Pork and sauerkraut.
Meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes, yep.
Meat pies.
How about, is that the dessert, meat pie?
Sometimes.
Is there another dessert for?
Yeah.
Like cannolis and pizzelles?
There are different ones. We did a lot of pies. my side did a lot of baking on as far as pies and
I'm a little confused by the meat pie. Okay.
Yeah, meat pie. Oh God, I don't even know why they made it. No, it was not good.
I don't understand.
I know there's people who like that, but woo boy.
But it's a meat. And then it goes in a pot like a sweet pie.
It looks just like a pie, yeah.
And what is mixed with the meat?
All kinds of stuff. Sort of like a hot dog.
I guess if the crust wasn't sugary, it would be like a carb, like a meatball. It would be like a steak sandwich.
I couldn't eat it. I don't. I know is at a young age, I went, ooh, that's disgusting, and I never had it again.
Yeah.
I know people like it, so no offense to you.
Sorry, okay.
But for me, wow.
So you could hold on to those things, like we said.
Yes.
But not be attached to them like...
Yeah, not making them my identity.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Just like, so I actually ended up telling more Italian jokes and more German jokes than anybody else around me. And boy, did all the teasing stop, I'll tell you. All the cultural stuff stopped up until then. Until I was about 10, I was in fights all the time because of that. You know, little skirmishes as kids. And boy, when I stopped that, I broke the pattern. I broke the pattern of that insult fight, that competition, because... Mm-hmm. I just, you know what, let's try these. And then people who were harassing me ended up laughing.
So did everybody hear that? If you are being bullied, you need to make a joke of it.
If it's possible, absolutely.
If it's possible. Right. It really is true. Like, that's right, I am. I'm Italian, and isn't it awesome? I know. Right. I bet you wish you were, don't you? Like, you're confident enough to say, yeah, this is, I am this. The reason why you're upset about them making fun of who you are, because you must somewhere believe that you're not good enough as that.
Right.
Yeah, no.
Or there's something wrong with your culture.
So it's the importance of seeing beyond this whole culture programming.
Yes.
Thing, right?
So in the culture programming, I would say every one of you, well, not every one of you, and maybe none of you care. So I'm going to pretend you care, and I'm going to say, why don't you look at your culture and see if you can enjoy it for what it is, find the humor about what it is for all the cliches and the classics, and not take any of that personal. That would really shift everything.
Yeah. Are you going to let your culture define you, who you really are, and your inner strength? No.
But a lot of people will because they think they are their culture.
Yeah.
And I don't believe we are our culture. That's just my belief. You believe what you'd like. But my belief is that we are just these strong, innate beings.
Beautiful beings.
Beautiful beings. That it doesn't matter what culture we've come from, we still have that inner beauty. Yeah. And everybody in every culture has that inner beauty. So the cultures become secondary. They just affect how you look and your shapes and your sizes and your family history. But inside, we all come from someplace that isn't here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so why would I judge you for the clothes you're wearing?
Yeah, I want to give an example. Let's say you're in a women's group, and someone who's maybe Spanish or Mexican or Colombian stands up and wants to talk and is very expressive and very loud and very like, hey, yeah, this is it, you know. And
tell them to be quiet and sit down.
Maybe that's their culture. I just used an example of it, okay?
I know.
But this is how they express themselves, and that would look quite normal if they were with only their
culture.
Right.
Right.
And you begin to judge, look, she's being so this and that, and look, she's trying to get attention, and she might not be. She might. This is just how her culture experiences life.
Right.
So that's where you have to take a look and embrace that and say and see the beauty and look how she's hanging out and she's doing her thing, man. That's pretty cool. My culture doesn't do that.
So in the same way that you would look at your own issues about whether you're good enough, not good enough, whether you're pretty, ugly, whatever, you need to look at your culture. What judgments do you have on your culture? What judgments do you believe about your culture that would cause you to respond anything other than in lightheartedness or lovingness? What judgments do you have?
Let it be, how about this, the one I just said. if you start talking and you're nice and loud and you're expressing yourself and you're not embarrassed about getting up and just saying what's on your mind, maybe your culture doesn't do that. So that's a judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, that'll be a judgment. But maybe your culture does that, and now you've been in America and they don't do that here.
Because you know it means a certain thing, or they don't do that here. That's true.
And so now you're not fitting in with the new culture, and you're a little embarrassed of your home culture. So that's really just called learning to interface.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if people yell at the stock market, that doesn't mean you yell at the grocery store. You do what's appropriate. You don't do it because you're not good enough to do it, or oh my God, my culture is just terrible that we yell. Well, no, maybe you yell, and maybe it's okay to yell in certain situations, and maybe just learning and interfacing with another culture, you're finding appropriate interfacing that allows you to interact with others, not to cause problems or difficulties, and it's not because you're not good enough, and it's not because you have to conform, it's because you're learning to interface in an effective way.
As opposed to judging what you see in front of you. I have done that myself, not realizing until I understood. I've judged a certain culture, like, why are they doing that? Like, they're doing that. I know what that means when they do a certain thing. Let's say they're butting in front of, like, taking up a bigger space than they should. Or
Look, let's face it. There are some cultures that are spatially unaware or spatially uncaring.
And their culture is fine.
Or we could call it spatially challenged.
But let's say their culture is fine with doing that because that's what they do. But let's say my culture doesn't do that. So it means a certain thing
to
do it.
Yeah. Where I wanted to finish also was, as you talked over me, you rude cultural person.
Come on.
That must be the Italian in you that's just talking over everybody at the dinner table.
No, you always do, Michael.
So I never talk over you. You're such a, oh my God, what falsehoods.
Let's have a fight on
here.
Yeah,
falsehoods.
See,
These are falsehoods.
See how
Stop
we make
it with
up.
The falsehoods. I'm very angry with you now. I'm going to rage in a minute.
Okay, go ahead.
There's also cultures that are hyperspatially aware where they don't even like to get close to anybody. So
true.
Put a spatially challenged culture with a hyper-spatially aware culture, and you're going to have some conflicts.
Yeah, there's going to be some. Yeah.
Because they're not interfacing appropriately. So there has to be some adjustments made so that each culture has enough respect of the other culture, which mm-hmm. means they look at their patterning, they look at what they do, they make the changes that are appropriate in order to interface with another culture.
Just to
It's
know.
What we do in individual relationships. It's what you have to do with a husband and wife or a partner or children. You have to look at each other and then make adjustments so that it's a little bit more fluid and it's a little bit more acceptable or palatable.
All right, I'm laughing right now because it took a while for me to be able to interface with Michael because the certain conversations, this is the way we talk to each other. I'm just saying it like this and this is how it is. And he's like, but you are talking at me in your monologue and whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
So I had to learn to interface. I guess this is really why wars happen. I mean, wars
Absolutely.
We see right today,
hey,
now.
Look, what happens in a culture is no different than it happens individually. It is metaphorically the same.
So we can stop war. Maybe we should
we
go to the White House.
We could stop war.
Let's go to the White House.
The thing is, most people don't want to stop war.
That's another topic.
Right. So the real truth is they don't want to stop war because there's too much money to be made.
There's money to be made in war.
Yes.
Can you tell me why? I don't really know.
Oh, well, let's just go. Bombs, tanks, uniforms, toilet seats, ships, airplanes. More bombs,
bullets. Is that why it boosts the economy?
Yes.
Because these companies, oh my gosh, I never knew that we were...
Yeah, and then you get to make private deals with other countries and you get to sell your weapons to the other countries and then you get oil deals and you get mineral deals and you make all these exchanges and then there's scratch my palm by using my hotel because you're going to visit my country, or come visit my golf club because I'm the president, or
come, just hypothetical, of course.
Yes, yes, of course I'm making all this up. None of this is real.
Well, it couldn't be real. No, it couldn't be real. Why would that ever happen in America?
Right.
That couldn't happen.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, really. No, no. I mean,
oh,
shouldn't. No.
Oh, yeah, really. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. Okay. So, yes, all those reasons for making money in which that they keep the wars going. And it feeds the big bulldogs. And the little bulldogs are the ones who always pay the heavy price. And I'm all for protecting our country. I'm all for serving our country. I'm all for all those people who do. It's those, we'll call them politicians or people in power, that use our military for their own personal gain and to make it look like they're doing something they're not. That's the problem.
Mm.
You know, I think our military and our men and women are beautiful beings and serving, and it's just a magnificent thing that they're doing. But what those people in power are doing is what just corrupts it and distorts it, and that just needs to stop. And it's too important for most people around the world because there's too many power-hungry people that are in charge of all these games, and it's really very difficult to stop unless we unify. And we're probably not going to unify unless we get past this cultural differences and recognize that we're all just human beings wanting the same thing and accepting that. Because even when you see countries that, quote, hate each other or are at war, if you break it down, and I've met people in these countries, if you break it down to just two individuals from two separate warring countries and you had them talk to each other and they saw that each of them had families and children and husbands and wives, that they do not have the animosity toward each other that culturally they do. And the cultural belief system is perpetuating a war that the individual people do not necessarily believe.
Interesting.
And that's a shame. And so this is why the cultural stuff gets in the way on that. It can get in the way of relationships unless you learn how to interface with the culture you've married or partnered up with.
Mm-hmm.
Because a Thai behavior coupled with a Canadian behavior are going to be very different. And if you want to go extremes, an American or Australian with an Orient type of partner, they're so extremely different, and there's so many nuances that in order to get along, you have to look at the cultures and find the beauty in the cultures, but also realize that they are programs, that they are illusionary differences, and that underneath all of those external behaviors are people who feel the same. They get hurt the same. They get happy the same. They get down the same.
Mm-hmm.
So is there really any difference?
You know, there's so many startups all over the world that talk about they want to make change in seeing no prejudices, seeing each other as they are, no judgment. And really what we're saying now is cultural change needs to happen.
Yes.
We need to look at that. So
personal change.
Let's do a startup, Michael.
Personal change and cultural change.
Personal change, yeah.
We should do a cultural a startup. That would be interesting.
Personal.
Yes.
Change.
Personal cultural couple. Change.
Mm-hmm.
Enlightenment. Right?
Yeah.
Hey, guess what, everybody? We're all the same. There is a oneness. There truly is a oneness. Can you get past all the illusions of your culture and your family programming to find the beauty and the oneness of all of us as human beings?
There we go.
That's going to be pretty tough. But boy, do we need a big startup for that.
We do.
All right.
All right, well, it's time to...
Is that our
to...
next project?
Yeah.
I know she's going to do, but I just want to know if it was our
next
project.
It's our next project. It is.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to take a break.
Take a break, yep.
And we'll see you right after the break.
Teamwork Wins is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've been in business for 19 years. We assist children and young adults with invisible challenges in becoming self-directed, free-thinking, and creative individuals. I struggled myself with invisible challenges. With the self-realization of my own invisible challenges and my desire to help people like me led me to the inception of Teamwork Wins. We began with children like myself who had learning challenges and childhood sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. Then we moved to kids on the spectrum, ADHD, sensitive children. We ran an ESY program for 8 years. Our organization was considered the go-to at several Philadelphia school districts. For example, when there was a difficult case, like a selective mute, sensory issues, they would come to us. You can reach us at our website at www.teamworkwins.org, or you can email at info@teamworkwins.org, 215-680-2351. Thank you.
Hello, this is Michael Cavallaro from Adele and Michael, LLC, and The Adele and Michael Show. We have 7 published books between us. We create and share online coursework, transformational one-on-one private consultations, and provide groups and individuals with a wealth of information from our many years of experience and world travels. We have workbooks, ebooks, videos, and audios to make real personal change to help you heal from your own traumas, expand your awareness, and create the life that you want and deserve. We have given motivational talks around the world, and we are available for motivational speaking engagements anywhere that you would like us to come. We are also available for corporate trainings and individual sessions to help you attain whatever it is that you are seeking. For more information, please contact us at 215-680-2351. That's 215-680-2351 or Adele@AdeleandMichael.com. That's Adele@AdeleandMichael.com. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Adele from The Adele and Michael Show. I'm the founder of Teamwork Wins, and also an author, speaker, facilitator, and artist. My book is called Searching for Oz. It's about a woman's journey to consciousness, and it's based on a true story, my story. Dottie's life is falling apart. After an emotional tornado rips through her life, she wakes up and realizes she must go on an inner journey and return to the past, one she would otherwise rather not remember. A failed marriage, an unfulfilling career, and an unexpected emptiness that tears at her heart. Through this metaphorical journey of self-awareness, she reunites with old friends Leo, Timmy, and Brain, whose laughter, loving sarcasm, and wit motivate her to stay the course, along with Marvel, who assists them to unveil a deeper understanding of themselves and human life. Marvel catches Dottie's eye and curiosity while opening Dottie to a whole new world. Come along now and discover what fate holds for Dottie, and maybe even for you. I help women get to their own self-love. I provide one-on-one coaching and a revolutionary Searching for Oz coursework. So give us a call at 215-680-2351 or simply go to our website, adeleandmichael.com. Thank you.
Well, welcome back.
Welcome back. Well, all right, I want to give a shout out to Marjette from the Diva Girl. I was just there last night. Once a month and for her meetups, they're awesome. She started the Philadelphia chapter for the Diva Girl organization that started in Canada. It rocks. Just a bunch of women, and there's a lot of things happening.
I have a good time when I go.
you're not invited.
Well, okay.
Unless they do a Diva Man.
Diva
group.
Man, that's what we should have. Diva Man. Diva Man. Dun, 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 dun.
But look it up. Go on the internet and look up Diva Girl, Philadelphia, and you'll find Marjette. She's awesome. That's all.
Okay, that's all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to another topic here on the second half of our show.
We are.
And this topic is going to be what?
Midlife crisis.
What is that?
Midlife crisis. Why do people get them?
Get what? Well, sounds like a disease. I got midlife crisis. I'm sorry.
Well, they say it occurs between 45 years old and 59. That's what it says right now on the internet. Yes, I looked it up.
Oh, gee. That's not my experience.
It happens sooner or later.
wider range. What did you say the last was, 55?
To 59.
Oh, yeah.
45 to 59.
Yeah, no, they're wrong. I'm sorry. I don't care what they say.
Well, I'm 55.
You're out of it. I've worked with way too many people. Happens anywhere between 30 and 65.
30?
Yep.
Yeah.
30 and 65.
That's changed, I guess.
No, I don't think it's changed. I think they're wrong.
They didn't take the poll correctly?
That's right. They polled only people between 35 and 59. No, it happens, in my experience, I've seen it anywhere between 30 and 65. Depends on the maturity of the individual and where they're at in their life.
That's what it really is.
So
let's define.
Okay, you define midlife crisis. What does that mean exactly?
Does
that mean I'm in the middle of my life and I'm having a crisis?
Like
exactly what it means.
No, it means like, okay, I want change. This is not working.
Does that mean that?
You know, midlife crisis. Yeah, there's a crisis involved.
Yes.
Just how it said.
Well, maybe
midlife. Midlife would be around 45. Let's say everybody lives till 90.
maybe they've changed their taste and they don't like hot dogs anymore. Is that a midlife crisis?
All right, look it up.
So you want an exact definition of what a midlife crisis is.
Well, I really feel it is.
Well, it's obviously midlife.
Midlife, you're in the midlife.
They're assuming that we're going to die halfway past this mark.
Yeah, maybe they reached that.
So you see, if I have it at 30, I'm probably going to die at 60.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to have it later. I didn't have mine until I was 59, so now I'm going to live to 118.
Yeah. Okay, then I won't say it until. No. Well, I'm going to live forever, so. But, yeah, I mean, midlife, we just discussed it, right? And crisis would be something that happens to you? I don't think so. I think it's more of an internal realization crisis. That's what I mean.
Here's how they define it on the internet. An emotional crisis of identity and self-confidence that can occur in early middle age.
Huh.
It refers to issues and changes that occur in adulthood, typically in the range of the 40s and 60s. During this age range, a person typically begins to realize their own mortality due to the death of their parents or friends and the general aging process.
Oh,
that's kind of bogus.
There's so much to say.
Thought
about
to
that.
Be triggered by physical, occupational, or domestic events. They don't know. They're just making this stuff up. Jeez. I'm just going to say it's something that happens in midlife anywhere between 30 and 65.
Okay, and?
And?
What happens?
What happens is you start to, are we going to go with what psychology tells you happens?
Let's do both.
Or are we going to do what really happens?
I say both.
Well,
no,
what they say
is
psychology said, well, let's just read that again just for the kicks and giggles here. Issues that change during range typically begins to realize their own mortality due to death and something else. And I'm going to say, I don't think so. What happens is, we'll talk real stuff now. We're not going to talk their mumbo jumbo.
You can just look that up if you want.
Right, you can do whatever you like. What really happens in a midlife crisis is when human beings evolve from getting patterned when they were children to practicing their patterns to see how they work to creating an identity from the patterns that they have created to mastering those patterns and taking them on as an identity. That's the first half of human evolution. The next stage could be midlife crisis. That's when the individual recognizes at some level, either consciously or unconsciously, that their patterning isn't working anymore and it doesn't feel true to their heart. And they begin to question the programming and patterning of their life, which would include, you should be a millionaire, you should have a new car, you should have a red convertible, you should have a girlfriend, a boyfriend, a an affair, a not affair, 10 children, 12 cars, a skyscraper, or whatever it is your culture and your programming says you should have. And when you get there and either accomplish it or get there and realize that none of those mean a hill of beans because there's something empty inside, people now first start to question all their circumstances. And then they start to look at, well, I didn't acquire this and I didn't become successful here. And I don't know what to do now, or I don't know what to do with myself, or I'm tired of sports, or I'm tired of drinking, or I'm... All these things are starting to get old and worn out because they have no meaning. And what's really happening in midlife crisis is that consciously or unconsciously, you are discovering your patterning is false.
Ha ha.
And it's empty. And it's shallow. And it's not enough, and it's not fulfilling. But you don't know what it is. At first, you start to think it's you. So it becomes about you, and that's when it becomes a personal crisis. Because nobody's figured this out yet on the planet. So we're announcing it right now on the planet, so everybody knows. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what a midlife crisis is. It is nothing else, and everything else is secondary to this. So once the individual recognizes that there's an emptiness inside, they are actually seeing that their patterns are no longer effective at keeping them numb and dumb, no longer effective at keeping them happily distracted or sadly distracted. And now there tends to be this unfulfilled feeling within them, and there's a drive to find true fulfillment. And all it is that they're starting to see through their patterns and realize that their patterns are false and illusionary. And now where do I go becomes the question. And this is where they get lost, because nobody has the answers and everybody tries to give them something. Oh, go try a hobby. Go try painting. Go try dating. Go get divorced. Go have children. Go change your career. No, none of those are going to fulfill you, because that's not where the emptiness is. And that's just another form of reprogramming and repatterning in order to avoid seeing through the illusion of all of the programs you've had up till now.
Mm-hmm. And see who you really are.
Right.
Yes.
So, or not know who you are, so you're scared to even look. And that's why people freak out.
Yeah.
So let me distract myself. I'm going to have two girlfriends, two boyfriends. I'm going to go drinking every Saturday, and I'm going to do the crazy things that's in the comic books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those are going to fulfill you, and none of those have anything to do with this other stuff. It has purely to do with the programming, and its falsehoods are being revealed, and intuitively you know it, but you don't know what it is or why it's happening. And now you're reacting emotionally based upon an unconscious feeling that you can't explain, and neither can anybody else.
Beautifully said. That's great. I need to say something out loud.
Okay, say it out loud.
Ready?
I'm going to say it quietly.
So a child is in the family. They look at their parents. Let's say a young boy looks at his father. This is how an adult man is. They lodge that in. It defines their future of what he should be like when he is an adult, a male. So then he gets to be between the ages of 30 and 65, and he's becoming a man, and he is a man now acting out what he believed and perceived you're supposed to be when you're that age. So now you're in that space of, this is the way I'm supposed to be. I have my family, I'm just, you know, hypothetically saying, family, work, all of this. And then they realize, then we get to what Michael just said, I really am not this. They wake up and they say, they have an epiphany. I am not all this. This was my father. I'm not my father. I want to be me. I've been programmed and to be the way I perceived a man should be as a child. So I'm following that, and I feel trapped. Midlife crisis happens, and now it's time to move on and be something else. So that's how I see it, yes, what you just said.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I would add to this as they stated in those definitions earlier that it's often about death and mortality people starting to see the end coming, et cetera, et cetera. And I would say that's inaccurate also. All of these things they're saying can be included, but this is not where it stems from. That death and dying and mortality thing, yeah, okay, you might look at that, but that's because you don't know where to look for what's really going on. Nobody has taught you that it's the programming and the patterning that you're facing.
Bingo.
And you're seeing that it's an illusion.
Yes, bingo right there.
And so you start to look around for what might it be. Well, I'm going to die in 40 years, or I'm going to get old, and then all your fears come in, and then you make up stories, and then all these other things. And so are they true that they happen? Yes, but all they're talking about is the mind and how the mind runs rampant because it doesn't know what to do, and no one has directed it how to fix this.
So they start making up things, you're saying?
Yeah.
Ruminating
so
and
they,
worrying.
So they create up stories to explain the anxiety that they're having so that everybody can be happy and think it's all good. Or they give them medication and then they're all good. No, get to the root of the problem. Stop with the darn medication. Medication is sometimes useful, but for the most part, it's a complete and utter waste of time except for poisoning the person's body. Yeah. And yes, are they going through an identity crisis? That would probably be the closest that the professionals get to a real definition is there is an identity crisis, and you are absolutely correct. That is because the individual has realized that the identity that they're living up till now is not theirs.
Right.
It was and they don't know why, they don't know how, but they do know that it's unfulfilling. It doesn't answer questions. It doesn't give them what they want. And so they are having an identity crisis. But it's not about calming them down and telling them they have a good identity or creating a new one. It's about going within and discovering your true essence and your connection to your self-love. When you get there, then the real identity surfaces, and then you recognize that all of your identities up until this point have been misunderstandings, and they're actually roles. R-O-L-E-S. The roles you played in life, they are not an identity, but you mistook them for an identity. So when you started to realize that they were all fake or they would all end, then all of a sudden there's a panic because who am I? Who will I be? What will I do? Well, I guess I'm just going to die, so I guess it's near-death experiences coming up, and they panic.
But it's what that child perceived and what a male should be. So when they grow up, they were that male.
Or a female, yes.
Or I'm just giving
or
an example.
Or whatever they created.
And
huh?
I gave that example for a reason because now okay. The male's the adult and he's doing his thing and he's feeling like the midlife crisis. So let's say a wife says to him, honey, no, you did well. You supported our family and you did this. Yeah, he did everything.
Right, that he's that programmed to do.
Programmed to sure. do and the right. identity thing. So he has the right to do the midlife crisis, but not be crazy and do rash things like, I'm going to leave now, or I'm going to cheat, or I'm going to... No, he has the right to say, I'm not fulfilled. Well, guess what? You will be fulfilled when you go back and you look at that childhood and you see what you perceived and believe and what you were trained. But Michael, you're right. You were not taught to do things differently.
I wonder how many people, if left to on their own, would choose to do all the things people do in their culture. So if you weren't told that you had to grow up and raise children and have babies and have a car or have a house or have a job or have a business, how many people would do that? Well, let me tell you, probably zero. And if they did it, it was by accident or because it suited their needs. And let me tell you the generation that's proving this to be fact.
Oh, yeah.
The millennials.
They are.
The famous millennials. Let me tell you what. They have some really awesome concepts and really awesome ideas. They just don't know quite how to interface with society as it is today.
Not all of them, right?
But let me tell you, they got the right idea. This is about them. It's about doing it their way. Who needs a job? Why do you need a job? Why do we have to have jobs? Why can't we sustain ourselves? There's plenty of wealth in the world. There's plenty of resources in the world. Why do we have to go to work to support some corporation so that we can support ourselves? This makes no sense. I want time for myself.
Yeah, why can't I make up an idea and then create it and go to a cafe on my laptop and then create the business on it? This is like complete creativity. Can I just do that? So, but they have problems, some of them, problems with the interfacing.
Come on, let's face it. Half. There's a great majority of them that do. And for those of you who are listening that don't worry about it. Ignore what I just said. For those of you who do, listen to what I just said and try and polish it up so that you make it easier for yourself.
Yeah.
It's not about conforming. It's about interfacing. And so if you take it as we're just talking about interfacing makes your life easier, not conforming makes your life easier.
There we go.
Conforming actually makes your life harder. So interface, not conform.
That's it.
And they have a beautiful idea, and probably I'll bet none of those would do the standard cultural programming unless it was sheer by accident, because they're so different. So unique in their way of being.
It leads back to the cultural
right. Yep.
Programming that we talked about. Isn't that funny?
And so, yes, I think that when they help people with midlife crisis, they're missing the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And up to this point, I haven't met anybody who either agrees. I've had plenty that disagree with what I've said, but I haven't met many that agree with what I'm saying or even understand it, especially in the professional field. If you could recognize that the person is having a crisis because the programming has run its course.
Mm-hmm, right there.
And the programming is no longer strong enough to create the illusion that they are this role or identity. That strength is dissipating, and they are starting to see through the illusion of their programming and know something's missing at the core of who they are. It's not about mortality. It's not about cars or women or men or businesses. Oh, yeah, you can make it all that, and people do. That's just a distraction. That isn't what it's about. And if you could get to their core of who they are and really teach them to go inward, get in touch mm-hmm. with themselves, and get that inner strength we were talking about, and not empowerment, if they could develop that inner strength, their midlife crisis would go away.
Yeah.
It would disappear. They wouldn't even have it again. In fact, once they really understood what was going on, even their mortality issues would start to go away.
Right, and enjoy the rest of their life.
Right.
You know,
they would flourish.
So, right. And so what are the indicators? The indicators are when you say things like, I don't know what's missing in my life. There's something missing and I'm not happy. And then you could even drop down to into a depression. So those people that are listening to us right now, look at that. Look at your
where
identity.
Where I feel empty.
Where you feel empty.
I don't know who I am anymore. I don't recognize my wife, husband, children. I need something in my life, but I don't know what it is. I want something in my life, but I can't explain it. I can't grasp it. I can't talk about it. But there's just something missing, and I know it's missing. And they'll even talk about the fear of death or their mortality. But here's the other thing about mortality and death that nobody has said yet is that it is the old identity's fear of death, meaning that the person is going to realize that they aren't that identity and that they are something more. And so the identity, which is an aspect, actually has its own fear of death.
So when that's
because
worked
on, it knows that the identity is going to be removed or dissolved, because it knows intuitively, or they know intuitively, mm-hmm. that this is going to be removed. They don't know who they're going to be because the new identity hasn't been birthed, or their connection to their true self hasn't been birthed, so they think they're dying. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes about life and death. So they do crazy stuff so that they can get away with it, so that they can feel fulfilled and get life. And all it is the identity perceiving its own end. And nobody has discovered that yet. This is not a death. This is not mortality. It is the mortality of a false identity being recognized by its owner, and its owner not yet being conscious. So there's a demise coming. It can feel it, it can smell it, it can taste it, but it doesn't know what to do with it. And the owner of it is not conscious enough yet, and society isn't conscious enough yet, and the professionals aren't conscious enough yet. So they assume the person is fearing death, because how else do you explain it? But it's not. It's a separate aspect of the individual fearing its demise and knowing that it's coming, simply meaning that it knows it's going to be reprogrammed, needs to be reprogrammed, and it's not going to exist anymore in its same shape or form.
That's beautiful. So before you decide to act out on these emotions and feelings, right, you want to look at what Michael just said. You don't want to act out and then have consequences. You want to look at the identity of what you created all this time in a certain situation from your childhood beliefs and perceptions.
Right.
That's just awesome.
Yes. And if you get what I said, and it's worked every single time for every single person I've worked with.
Yes.
And when you get that and you help them develop that, their midlife crisis ends. It no longer exists. And they move on like it never happened.
Yeah, it's so nice. Okay, so, it's time to go.
Yes. Wow, that went fast.
Yeah, it did.
And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
And we will see you
next Thursday.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now.